We just had stand-up comedian, documentary filmmaker, and professional truth-teller W. Kamau Bell join the show, where my own writers helped him destroy me. Why does this keep happening? Kamau has a new show too, Who's With Me, where he breaks down the current cultural and political dumpster fire and sits down with someone he genuinely admires to give them their flowers, ask the questions he actually wants answered, and land on something real we can all do to make this hellscape a little more livable. He's recently had conversations with Leslie Jones on turning pain into comedy, Robert Reich on the fight for democracy, and David Diggs on chasing creative projects. It's funny, it's got heart, and it's a reassuring pat on the shoulder for anyone who needs it right now. Watch new episodes of Who's With Me on YouTube or listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Tommy from Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics to talk about how to fix this mess. Even President Obama made a surprise appearance. We're doing it all again November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcasts, panels, and workshops. Plus, there'll be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get tickets at CrookedCon.com. If you're a friend of the pod, you get a discount too. See you there.
To Love It or Leave It live from Hollywood. I'm John Lovett, and tonight I'm pretty in pink. That's on me. I think I put the emphasis in the wrong place. And tonight I'm pretty in pink. All right.
Okay. We've got
a great show for you tonight, but first let's get into it. What a week. In a contentious hearing on the origins of COVID-19 and the government's handling of the pandemic, former national health official Dr. Anthony Fauci invoked the Fifth Amendment 111 times. "I'll just let this guy do the talking," said Fauci as he opened his bag and released a coughing Chinese bat into the hearing room. But first, Fauci explained why he wouldn't be answering questions, saying this of committee chair Rand Paul.
"The only conclusion I can reach is that the sole reason he is calling me before this committee is to get me to say something, anything, that could vindicate his repeated public pledges that I end up, in his words, quote, behind bars, unquote. Any reasonable person who has followed his unhinged obsession with me would readily come to the same conclusion."
Damn, Fauci, 85 years old and still administering jabs. Fauci's silence gave the Republicans an opportunity to do what they basically wanted to do anyway, which is yell at him for a while. Here's Josh Hawley.
"You were so focused on getting every award and every drop of cash that you could, all because you wanted to be on TV, you wanted to be the sun god of science, you wanted to be the guy who was in charge of it all, you wanted to lambast Trump, you wanted to make sure that nobody else stole your spotlight, you wanted to be the guy. You had time to sit for In Style magazine. Somewhere along the line, it became all about you. You became a narcissist and a megalomaniac and a liar."
And you know what? Holly's right. Having a lying, narcissistic megalomaniac obsessed with the spotlight in charge during a pandemic was a disaster. Also, there's something about his tone that's like it's a mix of Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park that's like, You're only obsessed if you could. You never stop to think if you should. Plus, he does a little bit of a, like, theater kid version of Tom Cruise, being like, "Fauci, did you order the code red?" You know? Here's Ohio Senator Bernie Moreno.
"It was about 6 years ago today that I decided I'm going to give up my businesses, sell them all, run for office, run for the United States Senate. Here I am sitting in front of you 6 years later saying, who the fuck do you think you were for doing that?
For 6 long years, I've sacrificed and campaigned and fought to finally have the chance to sit in this chair across from you to say to your face what I've wanted to say since the dark days of the pandemic. Fuck you, bitch! I yield my time." Moreno recounted a specific story about a mother who was arrested at her son's football game for not wearing a mask. If you're curious, it made the news at the time. It was from September of 2020. Of course, at the time, Ohio's mask mandate was issued by the state's Republican governor, Mike DeWine. And the guidance wasn't Fauci's alone. It came from the White House under Donald Trump. All of this is an effort to rewrite the past in order to turn Fauci into some sort of supervillain, even suggesting Fauci was responsible for the virus itself. Here's Tommy Tuberville.
And we're going to go after him with everything we've got because the guy killed or had something to do with killing 9 million people.
We can't prove that, right? But that's yet to be determined how many people are due to that.
We can determine it. We can determine it because he was in on the gain of function. He was
You're
a guy
saying
that
you can determine
this.
It. We understand that. Yes.
You can always tell when the reporters over at Fox News attended that mandatory defamation training after the Dominion lawsuit. She's like, I'm not going down for this. Now, if you're not a consumer of right-wing media, you might be confused. You might think, I know they don't like Fauci, but I didn't realize they have decided he's a mass murderer, but maybe I ran out of Free New Yorker articles. What gives? Great question. The answer is a little long, but I've promised the producers of this program that I can whip through it in about 2 minutes. Start the timer. The claim is that when Fauci was at NIH, his agency funded a research grant at an organization that in turn issued a grant to the Wuhan lab where some believe the virus emerged. And that grant funded a project in which scientists created a version of a coronavirus that was more infectious in mice, which could be considered the kind of gain-of-function research that Fauci denied was taking place. So far, not a great set of facts for Anthony Fauci, who, and this is neither here nor there, is not Jewish. But scientists believe this research cannot be the source of the pandemic because genetically, the virus in this study is just not closely related enough to COVID-19, which is certainly a relief for Fauci, as is the evidence that points to the virus emerging from the nearby market and spilling over to humans from animals at least twice. At the same time, there is no question that the Chinese government had engaged in a massive cover-up. The only question is what they were trying to hide. Did COVID escape from a lab or from a nearby market? We may never know, but the experts who called it a conspiracy theory were wrong, as were the efforts to protect us from uncertainty and bad facts throughout the pandemic. And that is to me the most important lesson of all of this that the Republican grandstanding prevents us from actually learning. And I'm sorry there aren't more jokes in this part. Not every day can be Lindsey Graham's funeral. Fauci and public health officials were in an unprecedented emergency, terrified that the healthcare system would come apart, trying their best to communicate with a scared country with rapidly evolving evidence about a novel disease at a time when the President of the United States was spreading misinformation from the White House podium on a daily basis, lying about case numbers, about hydroxychloroquine and bleach, lying about masks, about the severity of the pandemic. Even so, many officials acted like pundits, gauging how much truth and nuance we could handle in order to elicit the best behavior from the public. That was because anti-vaxxers and right-wing trolls undermined faith in public health officials and acted like basic steps to protect each other was the second coming of Mao. But it was also because of a lack of faith in the rest of us. It was true of public health officials and a lot of journalists who, from a place of better safe than sorry, downplayed their own uncertainty and preferred simple directives to ones that more clearly reflected the actual complicated evidence. It may have come from genuine concern, but there was a cost. This hearing is obviously part of a fucked up Republican agenda to smear an 85-year-old doctor who devoted his life to public health so that they can perform for an audience that wants to be told that the pandemic and all that pain and trauma was really the fault of liberals. But that doesn't mean Democrats, with all of our respect for experts and institutions, aren't susceptible to a kind of condescension that is not only counterproductive, but politically toxic. And if we fail to learn that lesson at our peril in the next pandemic and every election in between, stop the timer. Okay. Now, thank you for bearing with me. Here's a joke about Lindsey Graham that I thought of after the show on Tuesday. Lindsey Graham is a lot like a Trojan horse. He'd love to be filled by a bunch of Greeks before killing a bunch of civilians. Speaking of dead guys, Mitch McConnell has now been absent from Congress for over a month as he recovers from what he claims was a fall. For comparison, Lindsey Graham, who is dead, has missed fewer than 3 weeks. McConnell's office released this new proof of life photo, once again showing the Kentucky senator smiling next to his wife, former Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. This proves nothing. Any AI image generator could produce a comparable image with the prompt, quote, Elaine Chao pretending her husband is alive. The photo was accompanied by a statement supposedly by the senator, which said, I'm still working hard to get back to my full schedule of work in the Senate, though a bad sign that the statement began with, as the late Mitch McConnell once said. His office also released a statement from his physician saying that McConnell continues his recovery from a fall at home in June and that he is not yet medically cleared to leave the rehab facility and return to the office. Here's the problem. This statement might make sense if Mitch McConnell was a baseball player with a torn ACL or an astronaut with a bad case of ate lettuce. But he's a senator. The job of the senator has literally zero physical requirements. You just need to be conscious and able to communicate a yes or a no. You don't even need to be able to raise your hand in the Senate. Being able to raise your hand is considered showing off. Even Dianne Feinstein was still physically at work. She didn't know she was there, but she was there. And speaking of elder abuse, newly released audio tapes appeared to show then Vice President Joe Biden sharing classified information with his ghostwriter in 2016. I would say, though, from here on out, as long as Biden's problems are with a ghostwriter and not a ghostbuster, I think he's in pretty good shape. The tapes were released by a conservative group connected to the Heritage Foundation after Biden lost a legal battle to keep them private. You can see why. Said Biden in the tapes to the ghostwriter, who did not have a security clearance, and this is real, quote, "The next thing I have here is classified." You can hear Jill Biden yelling, "Joe, no," and then what sounds like her squirting him with a spray bottle, but it was too late. Speaking of abuse by an elder, President Trump on Wednesday announced a $22 billion renovation of Virginia's Washington Dulles International Airport at an Oval Office event alongside Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy.
Thank you for being here as we unveil exciting plans for a major and long overdue renovation and reconstruction of Washington's really horribly thought of Dulles International Airport. We are announcing plans to add more than 5 million square feet of new or renovated space. We'll replace the current C and D concourses, which are basic disasters, all the while preserving the iconic original terminal.
By Thursday, Dulles was completely covered in algae. This guy moves fast. Here is the President of the United States in the midst of an ongoing war, getting deep in the weeds of the planned airport parking garage.
So we're gonna have a magnificent garage. What would you say, Sean? How many cars?
32,000 parking spaces.
32,000. It'll be actually the largest garage in the world. 32,000 is big.
Oh boy, you could hold a lot of classified documents in there, said Joe Biden. The president, believe it or not, went into even further detail about the garage.
Mostly above ground. We don't like down. People don't like going down underneath.
I'd guess Trump has gone his entire life without going down underneath. Usually the kind of crass stuff kills. But not today. A sophisticated crowd. Here, the president continued.
It's an impossible airport. You get off a bus, you go into a train, you get from a train, you get onto another bus. It's a worse airport.
He says this like he personally experiences airports. The last time Trump went through an airport, you could smoke in there with a gun in your carry-on and a full-size shampoo bottle in each hand. And look, we've had a lot of fun tonight, but here's the thing. Trump is getting rid of the Dulles Airport people movers, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Dulles Airport people movers, but they are terrible. And so I guess what I'm ending on is, make America great again? All right, we've got a great show for you tonight, and we'll be right back with David Diggs.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Zazzle. Gift giving can be tough for a lot of us. There's nothing worse than showing up with something generic that you're not even sure your giftie will like. That's where Zazzle comes in to save the day. Zazzle is a custom marketplace where you can basically take any product, a mug, a tote bag, a card, a phone, case, and personalize it for yourself or someone you love. Browse millions of designs or create your own from scratch and customize the product to your taste. Either way, you're the designer. Everything is made to order, so you never have to worry about an item being out of stock. You can pick it, customize it, and you're done. Over 30 million customers have trusted Zazzle with their most important gifts. Yours is next. You really can find a gift for anyone on Zazzle. Just filter by product or occasion to find the perfect gift. Then just select your personalization options directly on the website. It even allows you to preview what it will look like before you order. Zazzle makes it so simple to create a unique gift for any occasion right now. Save 25% on your first order at Zazzle.com. That's 25% savings on your first order at Zazzle.com. Go make something amazing, Zazzle.com. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by SelectQuote Life Insurance. We all know we need it, but we keep putting it off because we think it's complicated or expensive or that we'll live forever. Stop telling yourself you'll handle it later and take care of it today with SelectQuote. In 15 minutes, you can have coverage that fits your lifestyle and budget. Here's what makes SelectQuote different. Their licensed insurance agents work for you, not for the insurance company. They compare options across multiple carriers to find you the right coverage at the lowest price. They've been doing this for nearly 40 years and have helped over 2 million people find coverage, even if you have health issues. They can help. High blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease. Their agents know which carriers will give you the best rate for your specific situation. If you're healthy, they can get you same-day coverage with no medical exam. Other brokers push policies that pay them the most. SelectQuote's agents actually shop for you. SelectQuote, they shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/love it. Go to SelectQuote.com/love it today to get started. And we're back. We'll be joined by the great David Diggs in a moment. But first, if you haven't gotten tickets for Crooked Con, here's another reason why you should. We believe the answer to right-wing authoritarianism is a big, welcoming, fun, pro-democracy movement. So we've invited some exciting new people to join us at Crooked Con, a bunch of creators, a bunch of folks you probably know from YouTube who make sense of the news with humor and just sort of piping hot takes. You'll be able to spot them at Crooked Con and meet them at happy hours and Q&As and workshops. Check out a few of the many joining us at crookedcon.com. And you can grab your tickets there too. We will see you in D.C. And if you're in LA, you can still get tickets to Love It or Leave It at crooked.com/events, where we're always adding new guests. Check out our lineup, including comedians Elliot Glazer, Lisa Traeger, and California Congressman Ted Lieu. All right. Please welcome to the stage, he's a Tony and Grammy-winning actor, rapper, singer, and objectively a man who does not have time to be here, but we're glad he is. It's David Diggs. Hi, good to see you. Thanks for being here. So,
hi.
Hi. So I want to start by talking about The Boys.
Yeah.
On the final season, you're O Father.
Mm-hmm.
You're nominated for the song you sing as the character, and the song is so fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great song. It's cool when a silly song that you get to help create about turning a superhero into God instead of God like ends up being a bop, you know.
were there any villains that you were inspired by? Were there any villains you loved growing up that you brought to this? How fun to get to play a godlike supervillain.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what was interesting, and I was sort of aware that he was going to be one of the villains on the show, but you can't think about your characters like that, right? So I really, actually just studied a whole bunch of televangelists, which was a wild rabbit hole for a Jew to go down. it was super fun. I ended up, really appreciating the performance aspect of that. I spent a lot of... Yeah, my YouTube algorithms got all fucked.
Man. Can I tell you something? I used to be fascinated by Joel Osteen.
Yeah, yeah.
He's good.
Genius.
He is good.
Yeah, damn.
Blinks man. A lot.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But very, yeah. but captivating.
Yo, that's what I'm saying. And the performance, look, it's not an easy sell, God.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta get them. You gotta get them.
You gotta really get people hype. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors, a lot of pomp and circumstance, a lot of you know, all the good stuff.
But what's funny about the Boys is it's like this. It's very it's very silly, but the Boys is an amazing show because it figured out a way to parody what's happening, even though it often feels like what's happening can't be parodied.
I know, and I imagine that's one of the reasons. I mean, I was talking to some of the writers before the season started, and they were saying that how it was progressively getting harder as real life got more and more through the looking glass, that you don't want it to feel like a documentary, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, without the kind of being able to explode people's heads.
Yeah.
Which I think is good.
It's, yeah.
I think it's good that you can't do that.
Yeah.
I think we couldn't handle it. If there's one lesson from The Boys, it's good that we don't have these powers, among other lessons.
Right, right.
And there are other lessons.
Some, but yeah, that's the main one, the main takeaway.
So you're also in I Want Your Sex, which is directed by Greg Araki, who's on the show.
Yeah.
Now, you are kind of in between the Greg has strong feelings as a Gen Xer about Gen Z,
yeah,
and like what has happened because of them living online and being afraid of kind of discomfort. What was it like for you kind of navigating like what he was doing as like a millennial?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm like the first millennial also. Mm. I was class of 2000, right? So like I sort of skew closer to Greg's views anyway, I think.
Oh, you think if you're, oh, see, because okay, you feel like you're first wave millennial, but you have a Gen X energy?
I think if we're going to compare us to Gen Z, I'm closer to that, yeah, that side of it. And so, yeah, so I definitely, when I read the script, I was like, yeah, you're right. Why aren't kids having more sex? why are we so hung up about this? I think Greg, what's so wonderful about him is just that he, as a filmmaker, he is awfully concerned with the experience of the audience as opposed to the film. Right. I feel like sometimes you work with filmmakers and they're very fussy about the film itself. He is a genius and brilliant at structuring the film and all of that. But what he's super concerned about is like, I wanted to make this film really fun and I want to talk about sex in a really fun way. I want people to leave this film like having had a great time and maybe horny.
Not so horny. Horny enough to get home. You know? You know, who, I guess maybe not. Who cares?
Look,
let people have a good time.
I don't know. Yeah, this is all part of the problem. Why aren't we doing it in the theater?
Yeah, that's part of the problem. Hey, you people might not know this, but you have a hip hop group called Clipping.
I do.
And that you've been part of basically longer than anything else.
I know.
Forever.
Does anybody here know this?
You know about
band?
Clipping? Yo, wow.
Oh, sure.
Fans,
okay,
of Clipping.
That's always makes me very happy. You have to be kind of a weirdo to be in that band. So.
I think it's cool.
No,
I am a weirdo.
Yeah, yeah. You check. And, you'd be part of it.
Yeah, it makes sense. Let's check out a clip rather than explain it. I want to show people a clip from the Tiny Desk concert you did.
Gotta admit, that looked like fun. That looked like fun. The fuck is fun when a war ain't done? If the war ain't done, then the war ain't won. You swore to uphold all the pillars of the Federated something. That song you do.
So for people listening, that is the Tiny Desk concert, and you've taken a bunch of objects like a mug or ball bearings or other things, and there are these mechanisms that are basically turning them into drums and backing instruments. Why'd you do that?
We've been fans of the Tiny Desk series since it came out, but and it's gotten so big, right? They used to happen maybe like once every couple of months, and now there's, you know, four a week or something. They've gotten huge. And as they've expanded, we were like, this is great. I love all of these, but there's not enough desk for something called Tiny Desk. So we were always like, if they ever invite us on, we're going to use as much desk as possible. And we start like the actual desk in there. And we would always joke about this idea of trying to program little MIDI controlled robots to like play junk, like their coffee mugs and their little awards, whatever, statues, whatever was on their messy ass desk. We were going to try to convert our beats to be played by that stuff. And then they invited us on and we were like, oh shit, all right, we got a chance to do this. And it was way too much work. It was really, really hard to do for a one-off for everyone involved. I mean, we had to sort of, Bill and Jonathan, my bandmates, really had to spend like a lot of time trying to figure out how to program those things. And then the whole staff of Tiny Desk, they usually don't, you come in for a few minutes before the show and they do a sound check. We forced them to all come to work the night before and stay there until like midnight, like
to build all these little,
build them, and then they have to mic all of that crap individually, you know. So it was a much more technical undertaking than they were ready for, but they asked us to do the fucking show. So
it's cool.
You knew what kind of band this was.
Yeah, there's something about like, I feel like part of the reason Tiny Desk is appealing, I think part of the reason it's so fun to see you kind of just manipulate these real objects and make something cool and imperfect is we're all like what do humans do? Like, what are humans up to these days?
Right.
And like kind of proving our like, hey, you can't do this without, you can't do this yet.
Yeah.
You're robot freaks.
Yeah.
You know? But also just like the kind of the ingenuity and kind of DIY, like creative process as like what that adds to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love, one of the things I love so much about this band is we're always trying to do something new. And it is experimental music in the sense that, like, we don't ever know if it's going to work or not when we start doing it. And so every single idea is like, let's see what happens. And what we've gotten really good at is we know when a thing is done, when we've completed the idea. We don't always know if it's good or not, but we know we've completed the idea, and usually we'll put that out. So I like that.
What have you been like, you know what? This didn't work. We tried something interesting, and actually, we learned a lot. And if you don't ever miss a flight, you're getting to the airport too early, but nevertheless, that's not going out.
There's only maybe two. So the rule is all three of us have to agree to put it out. And it's only there's only really two songs that we like argue about, that two of us are like, this is done. And one of us is like, absolutely not. We can't put this out. And so what that means is there's not a ton of back catalog, which for our fans is sometimes upsetting because it takes us a long time between albums to put stuff out. But yeah. And it just, this process is slow, but yeah, there's not like we have a ton of songs we're sitting on. Most of them are already out.
What's like what are you disagreeing about on a current song where two of you want it to go out and one of you is like, no, it's not ready? Like, you don't have to get that. What is something that is, what are you disagreeing about?
That one is, it is lyrically and sonically referencing like a really specific and very, very brief trend in like Chicago gangster rap music. And if it's not, if you're not from that scene, and also, which none of us are, and and if you're not now, you know, 9 years ago, it sounds silly. It does sound like goofy, but that it was a real thing at the time, and we I think mimicked it pretty well. But I think it's mostly one of us is like, we waited too long. This had to come out then. And even then we shouldn't have been the ones doing it. And he's not wrong, but I still think it's a really good song. So I'm not the one who doesn't want it to come out.
Isn't it? There's something interesting though about, like, I think about it with movies and whether they get a release in the theaters, because I obviously will never see The Godfather in theaters or any of the movies that most movies spend. Every day after a movie is out of the theaters is another day it will live in the world and never be in the theaters again. But there's something that matters about when it happened and what happened when it happened, right? Because if that song, if you had released that song when it was at the time, it would still be now.
Yes.
And as relevant now as it would be now were it released today. And yet it feels wrong to not release it today because it didn't exist then. But if it was now, it wouldn't matter what happened then because there's only now. You know, isn't that an interesting thing?
It is.
Or is it?
It, if I were a little more high. no, it is. And I actually think music is one of these things that they are. It's very particular to music because everything is a time capsule of the. All music is this is what we were thinking right now. They are like, and I think in a way that even movies aren't, because just because we're watching people and we still have relationships with those people, but something about having this captured audio, your voice was only this way, this time when you recorded it on this take and you only, this person mixed it and this, all of these things only happened that one time. And I do find albums, people don't care about albums anymore, but in particular, like albums tend to be these time capsules that I find really fascinating. And, Yeah. So it is this constant battle of like, did we miss the boat on that? And does that matter? But I think in some ways it does, I think, because it's no longer what we're thinking about. Right. So we should have, it wouldn't be part of the same time capsule. I don't know.
I'll tell you who's not thinking about this. Claude. Thank you to David Diggs. Go see I Want Your Sex in theaters today, July 31st. Then maybe have sex if you want.
Do it.
But only if you want. David will be joining us again at the end of the show, and we'll be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Bombas. Outdoor season is in full swing. Whether you're heading to the park, lounging at the beach, or firing up the grill, Bombas makes your go-to summer essentials for all-day comfort. Tackle every activity with high-performance, activity-specific socks engineered for golf, yoga, gym training, and running. Made with breathable, sweat-wicking fabrics to deliver all-day comfort from start to finish. Compression socks usually scream hospital, but Bombas completely changed the game. Their options are ultra-soft, super-supportive, and genuinely stylish, a total must-have for all of your summer trips. Bombas sandals and slides are made with plush, EVA foam for maximum marshmallow-like comfort all summer long. I have them. They're fantastic. Lightweight, waterproof, and ridiculously cushy. And for every item you purchase, an essential clothing item is donated to someone facing housing insecurity. One purchase equals one donated, with over 200 million donations and counting. I love Bombas. I wear them every day. They're the best socks. Head on over to bombas.com/loveit and use the code loveit for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/loveit. Code loveit at checkout. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by AG1. Everyone loves a good summer vacation, but getting out of your regular routine can leave your body feeling a little run down. But it doesn't have to be this way. Head out for your summer adventures worry-free with AG1. Every morning, just mix one scoop with 8 ounces of water and you're good to go. AG1 is a daily health drink with a multivitamin, pre and probiotic, superfoods, and antioxidants. The easy delivery system means you'll get high-quality nutritional support every day, no matter when or where you start your morning. AG1 helps to maintain energy, support gut health, and to support immune health. The next-gen formula delivers 75-plus ingredients clinically shown to support gut health, fill common nutrient gaps, and improve key nutrient levels within 3 months. Love AG1. It's great to have just part of your routine in the morning. You start the day, you have AG1, make sure you get your nutrition, and then you don't have to worry about it for the rest of the day. Like, you know, like you would take a vitamin, or like make sure you get, you know, some good stuff, even if you're going to have like an Egg McMuffin or something. Visit drinkag1.com/loveit to get a free AG1 travel case with 7 free AG1 travel packs in your welcome kit with your first AG1 subscription. Order while supplies last. That's drinkag1.com/loveit. And we're back. You know my next guest from coming-of-age movies, but you're about to know him from coming to the stage right now. Please welcome Anthony Michael Hall. Good to see you. Thanks for being here. Yeah, that's great. Nice to meet you.
Thank you as well.
You know, we were talking about you. That's what you have to do to get ready for a show. It wasn't weird or anything. But that you managed to transition from nerd to jock. Any tips?
Just eat good.
Eat good?
Yeah, and I don't know, with no tips. It just took a while. You know, I went from being too young in the industry to now I'm a guy in his 50s, you know? So it's interesting. It's been a long run. No tips, really. No. I don't really have any tips.
What was that period like when you were, like, you're no longer young, but they're not seeing you as an adult? You know, there's a kind of a trope of like for Disney stars, they do something super sexy to prove that they're like, that's like the Hollywood thing. Like they like have
sexy,
to do their
sexy,
or they could be that, but like something that's like I'm no longer Disney.
Prior trope.
Like right. It's I'm no longer Disney.
Yeah.
All right, I'm an adult now. I've made the switch. But what was it like for you?
Honestly, just decade by decade, it's always been a challenge. You know, I chose a business that gives you no guarantees, of course, as we know, right? So I've just had to scrap at it decade by decade, you know? So in the 80s, I was a teenager. You know, my 20s, it was more challenging, I think, to get work. And then you just keep going, you know? You have to have a thick skin in the industry, for sure. So I'm just grateful for the journey. You know, I've had a long career, and I enjoy the work that I do. But yet, truly, it comes with no guarantees, so you got to really want it and just kind of keep scraping away at it.
Was there ever a moment, because a lot of people don't keep at it. They mm-hmm. say, I've had enough.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a moment where you're like, you know what, I'm going to become a lawyer, or you know what, I'm going into market, whatever.
Not where I made that decision, but certainly that self-doubt can creep in for any of us in any industry, absolutely. So that's part of what you battle, I think, you know. But I think at a certain point, you just have to decide to become unstoppable. So that's how I felt for myself, because, again, with no guarantees, there's no company to fall back on. There's no team. There's no, you know. So showbiz is interesting in that regard. But I'm just grateful, and I thank God I've had a creative life and have been able to, you know, persist and keep going. So I think it really requires a certain tenacity, though, for sure.
To consider yourself unstoppable. You said that with such a nice sort of like kind of...
Well, because you deal with so much rejection, I think, and a lot of different aspects of the industry that are tough to deal with. And a lot of that, you know, sends people packing, I think, a lot of times, you know, to deal with that sort of, to outlast uncertainty to some degree, I think is important.
Did anybody ever tell you to stop? Did anyone ever say, like, that's enough, Anthony Michael Hall? You gave
like
it a good
work,
run.
Give it up. Yeah.
You gave it a good run, but it's over for you.
Yeah, no. Maybe they could have helped me. No. No, I love what I do, and I've learned to, you know, I appreciate the work, and at the same time, it doesn't define me who I am. I'm a person outside of all the work that I've done.
I don't agree.
Yeah. Well, anyway. It's okay.
So you're on Nation.
How did you start writing speeches in Washington? That's what I want to know.
Oh, boy.
Is that a long story?
No. I was trying to be a comedian.
Were you?
And that's something where, boy, a lot of people have told me to stop. and yet I won't. I was doing stand-up. I was thinking about being a lawyer. Mm. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I ended up interning on the Kerry campaign in 2004, and there had been several hurricanes that year, and they needed somebody to write statements about the hurricanes, like our thoughts go to the people of Louisiana.
Sure.
And so I did those, and that led to a job, and then I ended up writing some jokes for Hillary Clinton when I was in D.C. For a roast of Barbara Walters.
Interesting.
And that was the thing that kind of got me in the door to start writing speeches. I ended up becoming hired as a very junior speechwriter. And then I was off to the races.
Very cool.
Now, you're on, I'm trying to think of a transition, speaking of Washington, D.C., you're on Nation's Dumbest on Fox, in which celebrities compete in a series of challenges and try to be eliminated first.
Like I said, show business can be rough at times. you know what? To be honest with you, John, this really took me by surprise. I'm a happily married guy. I've been married for 5 years. And as we know at home, you gotta have more than one TV. So I'm not someone who loves reality shows. My wife loves a lot of the dating shows and a lot of reality space stuff. So this was really kind of funny for me when I first heard about it. I was like, wait a minute, I don't know if this is me. But I started hearing about the people that are involved, and I just really embraced it. I just kind of reframed my thinking and went up to Toronto and shot this a couple months ago. And I had a great experience with all these people. I really did. You know, it was really fun. It was an interesting cross-section of people. We all got along great. And it was really fun and goofy. And Fox paid me a boatload of money. But anyway.
Nice.
Yeah.
I didn't get that much for being on Survivor, to be honest. So... but I wasn't there very long. So, the day rate was not great, given how much time I spent getting ready to go and then being stuck there because I got out so soon.
Gotcha. We can call SAG. They're nearby somewhere at home.
Yeah, I think that they wouldn't help me. now, did you have a mindset, like, it has to be strange to all of a sudden find yourself on a reality show.
Yeah.
You're very comfortable in front of cameras, but you're traditionally a character, and it gets edited after.
Sure.
There's a little bit more...
No, it was. It was awkward because typically I have to prepare something and have a role, you know, and I have work to be done before I get to the set. And this was just like, come as you are, you know, and it was really kind of funny getting to the set. And there was about literally an army of cameramen. There was about 25 to 30 people and the cameras in the hallway and the whole thing. But honestly, it was very well produced and thought out. It was a show that was, I guess, a hit in Norway and some other countries in Europe. So it's sort of a proven model. And we had a great time with it. You know, there were about four challenges per day, everything from, you know, trivia to math, science, all kinds of stuff, some physical stuff. It was really a lot of fun. So I really enjoyed all the people, and that was a real nice surprise for me. I didn't expect to
have
as much fun as I did.
You know? And you were saying backstage that you were bullied by JoJo Siwa, but that Ice-T and Carmen Electra and Andrew Yang came to your defense.
Very funny. No, you know, it's like the things that you learn about someone, like Ice-T, for example, right? You know, at some point he shared some stuff with us, which is amazing. You know, he's like, you know, I never did a drink or a drug in my life, but I was robbing jewelry stores since the 80s. You know, so, and then he was also an Army Ranger, you know, interesting things you could learn about someone. So, and, you know, Dr. Drew, I'd been on one of his shows in years past. Steve-O's a great guy. I had a lot of fun with Steve-O. All these people were great. And there were surprises from everyone. You know, everybody surprised me with their sense of humor and knowledge. You know, it was a lot of fun. It was really cool.
What's the dumbest thing you did this week?
Agreeing to the show. No, I'm kidding. No. No, the dumbest thing I did this week, what was it? Let me see.
I put my Swiffer pads in the fridge.
Really? Well, I have a 3-year-old, so we're just kind of exiting the potty training thing. We're just trying to get into potty training now. It's tough. It's tough. I've been changing diapers for 3 years straight. I'm exhausted.
What's it like having a 3-year-old right now?
Oh, he's kicking my ass. It's a lot. It's a lot of work. It's incredible.
Because, I mean, you're in your 50s.
Yeah,
you're a little old to be.
Absolutely.
You're an older dad. I mean, if I become a dad, I'll be an older dad. I know that. I'm thinking about that.
Life cardio is what I'm getting out of it.
Because, when we were getting ready for the show, I bent down in front of the desk to talk to Sarah and Raman about a joke, and then I realized I was just stuck down there.
Very nice.
Because I occasionally get my body into the position right. of someone in their 20s, but right, getting right. up, I'm in my 40s. Yeah. You can sit like you're in your 20s, but right. I get up
getting
in my 40s.
I agree.
So
I
what's
agree.
It like getting down to get pick up a 3-year-old? How's that back doing?
It's a lot of work.
You got to do. Got to get core. Got to get some core going.
You definitely do.
Part of the fitness thing we were talking about being a jock. Good thing you're not a nerd anymore. We might have some problems. You're a jock dad. A jock dad in his 50s.
That's it. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, my kid is great, you know. He's all goo goo and gaga over mom, and then he just comes over and promptly, like, swift kicks me in the nuts or, you know, drop kicks me in the shins. It's a lot. It's fun. It's a great time. Honestly, I'm loving being a parent.
Speaking of combat, you're on SWAT.
Transitions for 800. Yeah.
Now, on SWAT, you play a badass, a nation's dumbest. You ever thought about, you know, throwing Jack Whitehall, the host, into a paddy wagon or something, really kind of like make, you know, really kind of like be a crossover up or something?
Hey, you know, I had a lot of fun with Jack. You know, there was a lot of people that I didn't know much about them. Like JoJo, for example, I'd heard about her for years. I knew she kind of grew up in the reality space. Jack turns out is an actor on top of being a stand-up comic. I'd seen his series that he did on Netflix with his father, which is a lot of fun. But he was really cool too. He was really invested in the show too. You know, he was really kind of going through the motions with us, and he was really in there, in the trenches. It was a fun shoot. It was honestly, we did it in 12 days, and each day represented like one episode, and there were like four challenges each episode. It was a lot of fun.
Now, Anthony Michael Hall, you've been in this industry a very long time.
Yes.
You've been bopping around L.A. since you were but a boy. We have to imagine you know a lot, all the ins and outs of this town, and so we want to know them too, which is why we're going to pick your brain for a best of the best in a rapid-fire segment we're calling Anthony Michael Hall of Fame.
All right.
First up, where do I get the best sandwich in Los Angeles?
I go to a place called New York Pizzeria in the Marina. Pizza place, and I get a nice sub over there. It's not so healthy, but I don't know. What's
what
your
happened to the advice? Oh, man, there's a lot of great sandwiches in L.A. L.A. is a great sandwich town.
Is it?
It's becoming a great sandwich town.
What's your favorite?
Giada is great. I love that. I love the sandwiches there. Uncle Paulie's Deli.
Uncle Paulie's.
Those are great. There are a lot of great sandwich options. Who is the best director you've ever worked with?
I've worked with some good ones. Christopher Nolan, I had a small part in The Dark Knight years ago. He's pretty good. He's pretty good, that Nolan.
He's pretty good, Christopher Nolan.
He is. He's pretty good.
Boy, he's good.
You know, when I worked with David Gordon Green, I did a film, Halloween Kills, a couple years back. He was great. He was a lot of fun.
That was with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, she was great to work with. But David Gordon Green reminded me actually a lot of John Hughes. Very loose and very easygoing, very collaborative, fun guy to work with.
Cool.
Yeah, I liked him a lot.
Who's the best actor to be stuck with for a long day in which you don't have much to do? Who'd you have a good hang with over the years?
Well, Downey, years ago, we worked on a bunch of stuff together, but it's been a long time since I worked with Robert. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's it.
He went through a phase where he was too much fun, and now he's the right and
yes.
then, and then the right amount
yes.
of fun.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's
right.
part of it too. What's your
Coming
favorite
back
movie?
Is Dr. Doom, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Doom.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Doom. What's the best movie theater in Los Angeles?
I'd say the Cinerama Dome. I think it's coming back.
It's coming back.
Yeah. Read about
it's coming
that.
Back. Yeah. How exciting is that?
Yes.
What's your favorite movie theater snack?
I'm a popcorn guy. Even if I've eaten lunch, you gotta have some popcorn.
Gotta have some popcorn.
Popcorn with
I'm
the butter on it.
I'm
what
getting
about
popcorn.
You?
I'm getting popcorn every goddamn time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm doing? I'm buying Reese's Pieces. I'm throwing them on top.
Nice. You go there.
Just put them in.
Nice.
Shake it up.
There it is.
Shake it up. What's the best restaurant for a power lunch? An old school power lunch.
Power lunch.
I never have power lunch. I eat a slop bowl at my desk.
Yeah, nice. I don't have too many power lunches, but I've had some interesting, sort of business lunches. The Grill, classic.
Oh, the classic.
Beverly Hills, yeah.
Wow. You at the Grill and a power lunch.
Yes.
That's so cool. See Anthony Michael Hall in Nation's Dumbest on Fox, Hulu, or Disney Plus. You can also watch SWAT Exiles this September on Stars.
Yes.
When we come back, we have a golden egg.
Okay, let's do it.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
And we're back. Please welcome back to the stage, David Diggs. Come on back to the security side. We're back. Come on through. All right, great. All right. Thank you for joining us once again. It's time for the egg of truth.
The egg of truth.
It's too long. Too long a sting. Still going. Fuck. Here's how it works. We have a collection of conversation starters, dinner party cocktail conversation starters that we've made up. And we're just going to I ask them, and we have to answer them honestly, because it is the egg of truth. First up, when you feel a pain in your elbow, where is that pain? Is the pain in your elbow, in your brain, or does it not have a location?
I actually, I was at the doctor today because I'm a hypochondriac, and the I was complaining about elbow pain. Mine was like on the inside, but it would sometimes rotate to the outside. Anyway, my doctor definitely told me it was in my brain, like most of us.
That would have been my guess too.
You think the brain? But it's not, because it's in our elbows.
Yeah.
But then it's also in our brains, so maybe it's nowhere.
Does it? The shit hurts.
Right. But where is the hurt? Where is the hurt?
It's societal.
Yeah. Next question. Would you rather lose your sense of smell or have a sense of smell so powerful that you're basically in a perpetual smell prison?
I'd rather lose my sense of smell, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think I agree with that. It would be bad, but it's the absence of something versus the presence of something.
I know. But do you also lose taste, right? You lose a whole bunch of taste when you can't smell things. That's, I don't know. Maybe I'm taking smell prison.
Wow.
I don't know. I should ask my dog about it, right? That's how they live, isn't it?
Yeah.
He seems all right with it.
Right, right. But they are a bit confused sometimes because they're like, I smell a neighbor, you know?
Right. He also eats poop, so.
Right. Right. That's an important part of it as well. I was once on an airplane and it smelled really bad. And so I put earplugs in my nose. I sucked up one of the earplugs into my sinus cavity. And then I thought I was going to have to tell them to land the plane, but I couldn't bring myself to do that. And so I went into the bathroom of the plane and I, with every fiber of my being, did a kind of fma, like a fma, like holding one side, like jumping up in the air and falling and screaming out of my nose as hard as I possibly could. And it flew out of my nose and hit the mirror and fell down. And if you could bottle the relief, you could be a billionaire, because that was the greatest fucking feeling in my life. Because I went from, I need to tell the pilots to land, to nothing's happening. It was terrible. I knew people on the plane too. It would have been horrible. I was in agony. We were still taxiing. That's something that happened to me once, Anthony Michael Hall. That I did to myself. What do you do to go back to sleep when you wake up in the middle of the night?
I've started listening to podcasts.
Really?
Yeah, not this one.
Yeah, well, this is too exciting. Yeah. That's a compliment, because you're not trying to fall asleep when you listen to the show. You're being entertained.
No, no, no.
You're laughing too hard. Getting adrenaline from all the jokes.
I listen to a podcast that I do really like, but that are like, I listen to like sports podcasts that tend to use a lot of numbers, you know?
Huh.
That seems to do
that
it
helps.
For me. Yeah, I like it. It also puts me right out.
I used to do C-SPAN for that. I would put on C-SPAN and just have the droning of the floor noise, and that helped me fall asleep. Just to quiet the demons, Anthony Michael Hall.
I actually turn on like ocean wave sounds for my son. My son is sleeping with us for the last few months, so that helps when I'm up. Put
one thing
the waves
I saw,
back on.
That's good. One thing I saw on TikTok that I've been stealing and doing is trying to like get my brain in a sleep mode by saying random words by using the first letter and the last letter. So like you'd be like, abacus, September, rhododendron, wow. November. 2 months. I fucked it up already.
That works for you, though?
I think so.
I feel like that's just how I write my next song. Yeah. Probably like that's I'm up forever once I start that game.
Final question. Do you eat food off the ground?
Of course. I'm a toddler. What do you mean?
Do you eat food off the ground?
Maybe in my own kitchen occasionally. Yeah. If something falls, we'll see. Yeah. I think in my own kitchen.
I just don't know how I would know.
Let's make it better, but.
Cause
that's a good rule.
He is constantly giving me the end of something, the crust of something that he doesn't want. And I'm just at the point where I'm just eating it, whatever it is. It's because there's so much just waste. But how would I know? He drops shit all the time and picks it back up and starts eating it. Like, I don't know. I didn't even think about it until you asked that question.
A kid will pick a penny up off the ground and put it in their mouth.
Yeah.
I eat off the ground. Not if, but not outside, and not if either the ground or the food is wet.
Oh.
And we'll be right back. And we're back. And We've now arrived at the end of the show, which means it's time for second thoughts. Here's how it works. We've all been laughing it up, but my producers have been keeping a meticulous list of everything they wish I hadn't said or done during tonight's recording. Occasionally, and it clearly hasn't happened today, I can also receive a rare kudos. None today. So that's sad for me. And I welcome anything that you might regret from tonight's show that you want to express. Fauci isn't Jewish, but to be clear, we'd be happy to have him. I got mad at the audience for not laughing at a joke about Trump not going down on women, which does force you to picture Trump going down on a woman, which means you guys were right. Oh, one regret that they think I should have it to about my conversation with you, David, is my question was about your Tiny Desk concert. Why'd you do that?
That seems appropriate.
No, and so I probably could have come up with a better question.
No. I liked it.
I didn't ask Anthony Michael Hall if he liked my Pretty in Pink joke.
I wasn't in that film, but I didn't take offense either. It's 16 Candles. It was kind of like the second coming of...
You know what? I'll tell you what happened.
But you do look pretty in pink.
Thank you for saying that. Ish. I have a new regret. Here's what happened. Five minutes before the show, we deleted the joke there because it wasn't working. And we were like, it was like an off the cuff, like, pretty in pink, John Hughes, get it in there. I did also admit to inhaling an earplug through my nose into my sinus cavity and then having to force it out in the airplane restroom.
I'm just going to be laughing about that story for a long time, so I think...
Any regrets, Anthony Michael Hall? Other than not asking more questions about what this was?
I'll take the fifth and leave it there. I'm good.
And that's our show! Thank you so much to David Diggs and Anthony Michael Hall. There are 95 days until the midterms. Have a great night and have a great weekend.
Love It or Leave It is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Kendra James, Bill McGrath, Kelsey Gante, and me, John Lovett. Our production team includes Hallie Kiefer, Sarah Lazarus, Ramin Borsellino, Peter Miller, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Jay Banks, Gavin Purcell, and Matt DeGroat. And our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.